is Will Tinkin.
Thanks for listening to the Bitter Comics Podcast. And here's your host, JT Foreman.
Good job, dude. Can I have a high five?
Yes.
Good job. That's really nice.
Hello, this is episode 92 of Bitter Comics. I am JT Foreman, and I am here with two new good friends, Colton Contreras.
Hello.
The Contrarian Contreras. And Nick the Spick Castillo.
Fucking name.
The nickname the Spick was his idea, and that's why he's speechless, because he can't believe I actually said it. How's it going, Nick?
It's going fucking good. Cool. How about you?
I'm doing great. Colton's a ball and chain, old lady, wife.
Yes, sir.
Slave master.
Yes, sir.
You know, whatever.
Yes, sir.
May or may not be joining us depending on whether or not the dogs behave.
Yes, exactly. Yes, yes.
So, yeah, hopefully his kids will be nice.
Well, she's currently masturbating the dogs right now, collecting semen samples for breeding purposes with a
sexy
kangaroo.
That's hot. I gotta tell you, that's kind of hot. I'll, you know, did I turn this off? I think I screwed this up. Well, you know what? It's too late. We're just gonna move on. We're gonna move on, and if no one can hear me, hey, you know what? You hear me every episode. You don't need to hear me this time too. Well, we begin once again with our opening segment. JT was a real prick last week, in which I apologize for the cruel, offensive, and probably racist things I said last episode. So for my this is episode 92. So for my insensitivity in episode 91, I would like to apologize to black people, litter,
litter,
Clovis, the Tower District, musicians, and both kinds of pussy. If you'd like to know why I'm apologizing,
yes, to
each
both
of these things,
yeah.
Check out episode 91 and all our previous episodes at bittercomics.podbean.com. If you would like to subscribe to the podcast, go to that website and scroll down just a little bit. On the right-hand side of the page, there are buttons you can click on to subscribe using iTunes, Google, or My Yahoo. Or you can just go to the iTunes store and search for Bitter Comics. And then while you're there, you should probably look for some sort of a psychological medical podcast, because you really need that too, to subscribe to our show. And if you feel I owe any additional apologies or to make any comments, send us an email to bittercomics@hotmail.com. And in the subject line, please put, "You have an orange couch."
What the fuck?
That's interesting.
I just mentioned the fact that I have an orange couch last episode, and even I think orange is a strange color for a couch.
It is pretty weird.
It is pretty weird. I had just gotten my apartment, and I was driving from my dad's house to my new apartment with the last of my stuff, and I was passing by Hank Swank, you know, the 9-hole par 3 golf
course?
Yeah, and they were having a yard sale over there, and they had this giant sectional orange couch. And it's, you know, it's like a three-part couch and another three-part couch. It's pretty much like yours, but without the other piece on the side. And, no, I'm not going to bother telling all of you out there what this looks like. You know what? I have a picture of my couch. I'll put a link to that in the show notes or something. But anyway, so
I swear to God, if anybody actually goes on your site and looks for the linkage so that they can get a visualization of your site of your couch, they need to get better things to do.
Speaking of which, the couch is for sale. So just, you know, I've got an ad on Craigslist. I got a response. Well, anyway, I'll tell you about the Craigslist ad in just a minute, because that was a little weird. The guy who wanted to buy it from me. But hey, it's on Craigslist. Of course, it's weird.
Yeah.
But I'm driving by, and I see that couch there, and I was like, oh, you know what? I need a couch. So I stopped in, asked them how much they wanted, and the woman said, you know, told me how much. It was like 2 years ago when I bought it. I don't even remember how much I paid for it now. But I remember her saying that she had reupholstered it herself. And I believe her, because there are no tags of any kind on it. So, you know, if it were the original upholstery, there would be tags on there, right?
Yeah.
And there was no tags on this. So, okay, yeah, she reupholstered it, which means she didn't just choose orange. She went through a great deal of effort in order to have orange.
Yes.
For her couch.
Yeah. Worked really hard for that.
Yeah. That's there was a lot to go through to have an orange couch. And so that's dedication. But you know what? I used to play this online video game called Asheron's Call, just so all of you know how much of a dork I really am.
I actually know what the hell that's you're talking deep. About. Yeah. That's very
that's
deep.
Really deep.
That's really deep.
And my character name was Grove. And I wore my character wore plate mail armor, and I went through a great deal of effort to find armor that was orange in color. Mm. So I was orange in the game. I was the only person in the game who had a full suit of orange plate mail armor, which is really impressive to all of the dorks like me who play that game. And everyone else is like, dude, you should go get laid or something.
Yeah. Well, I
and to, you're right. Yeah. I should.
So you're in the proper company here. I once spent 7 months collecting all the correct dyes and specific colorings that I need in Star Wars The Old Republic to
get
my favorite colored character, and then I stopped playing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you have to make goals for yourself in that game, because as hard as they try, they're not really good at coming up with new goals for you.
No, so of course not.
You either have to like fighting with other players, or those games just you run out of things to do.
Yeah.
I never liked the player versus player aspect of any of those online games because it always gave me panic attacks. I would, you know, my heart would start pounding. I would feel like I was having a heart attack whenever I got into a situation where I was forced to PvP, player versus player, against other people. You know, playing against a computer is never a problem, but I don't want to fight other people. my brother Jacob once said, if I wanted a challenge, I would take up quilting. And I have to agree with him on that. I am not interested in fighting with other people. I fight with other people at work enough, you know, so I don't need to do that in my video game.
Yeah.
But, hey, guys, thanks a lot for doing the podcast. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Colton, the first time I met you was at Starving Artist Bistro.
Yes, it was.
A month or so ago.
I remember it as 1967.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
It feels like a long time.
Which, yeah.
With me, things do. So I understand that.
Yeah.
You said you were interested in doing stand-up comedy. I know you haven't had a chance to yet.
No.
I mean, the couple of nights that you've had off that there were open mics, you then got called into work, so you weren't able to do it.
Yeah, exactly. But, I've had a difficult time the last 3 weeks. I've been hoping to get a particular open mic, the Friday night sets here in Fresno, thanks to your
The Coffee Lounge.
Coffee Lounge.
Really, of all the open mics I've ever been to in my entire life, it is the friendliest audience by far.
That's definitely the one I would like to start off with. But Fridays have consistently, for the last 3 weeks, have befallen me. As a matter of fact, this week I thought I was going to be able to. I was excited to tell you today that I was going to be able to do it tomorrow because I was going to work tonight and have tomorrow off. But that got switched, and now I have tonight off, and I have to work tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
So at some point, I have a feeling that I'm just going to have to suck it up and go do one of the rougher crowds on a Monday or a Tuesday when I know I'm not going to be working.
Yeah, well, Starving Artist isn't too bad. They're not going to give you a hard time, but they may ignore you.
Yeah.
And just kind of talk amongst themselves.
Yeah.
I've always heard people saying that Bottoms Up is really difficult, but I've never had any problem there. And I don't think it's just, oh, I'm a comedic genius. Actually, everyone was cool there.
Yeah.
You know, the times that I have been. But, of course, it's only been a couple and just recently.
Yeah.
If you want a difficult open mic, what I consider difficult is the review. It's called Mia Cuppa now, and it's just because it really seems like they, and especially the host there, just don't like comics.
Yeah, you've had some problems with him in the past. You were telling me about him. I'm more interested in getting into a situation where I just kind of feel comfortable. That's
it.
As close to comfortable as possible, and that doesn't necessarily mean like a receptive or kind audience. It necessarily means
someone who's not out to get you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm not interested in going out. I don't want to get chewed out after getting off stage, and that's kind of my thing. But it's given me more time to work on material, and it's made me second guess literally everything that I've written down. I've had to rewrite my first 3 minutes probably 30 times by now. And it's the writing process I'm very new to, and realizing immediately that it's probably best not to sit there and hound on your own material for hours on end.
Yes,
because it doesn't seem to go anywhere yet.
Well, you know, very rarely have I ever been able to sit down and, okay, I'm going to write a joke now.
Yeah.
It's really a kind of rare when I've been able to do that. Usually something will pop into my head and spark an idea. And then once I have that idea, then I can sit down and work with it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's something happens to me in my life where it's like, oh, okay, that's funny. Like when my my girlfriend bought me this black leather jacket. I was like, oh, this is really nice. And then I noticed that she has one that looks just like it. And I was like, she just bought us matching leather jackets. And immediately I thought to myself, she's marking her territory. You know, and the joke I ended up coming out of that was, you know, it felt like she was marking her territory. I'd rather she just pee on me.
Oh yeah.
But she won't, no matter how many times I ask.
Oh yeah.
But I've never been able to force it. It always just comes naturally. For some reason, I'm now reminded of a joke I heard recently. Anal sex is like flowers. You have to surprise them with it once in a while.
Oh, yes, definitely.
I don't remember where I heard that first.
That has always been my approach to anal sex, and that's how I did it the first time. Yeah. Just slip it in and hope to God she doesn't scream.
Because Pat's in the other room.
Yeah, exactly. And,
you know what they're doing. Yeah,
I apologize right now. That sounded really rapey, but hey, she liked
it. You know, we're not here to judge. Yeah. We're here to ridicule, but we're not here to judge.
But as far as writing material, the first thing that I notice, and this is just a personal observation, is that I have a feeling that my stand-up is going to be very storyteller-based, only for the simple fact that I find it more comfortable to work with a story because it feels like the joke has context or scaffolding already.
Yeah.
And it feels like there's already structure there. So you're not creating a structure from the beginning. And telling a story anyways takes a bit of time.
Yeah.
And it also kind of has that emotional ups and downs and all that other stuff. And being able to play with something other than laughter, like maybe somebody's interest plus laughter, or maybe tell something a little bit sad or something like that, it just seemed a lot more interesting. And I just got really interested in some stand-ups that had been doing things like that.
Well, you're familiar with Mike Birbiglia?
He's
probably the most well-known of the storytellers of this time.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know, lucky. But if you're going to do storytelling, you're going to need more time on stage in a performance. Like if you were in L.A. and you start going to open mics and you want to do storytelling, they're going to say, okay, you got 3 minutes. You're not going to have no time to get through your story.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, the fact that you're here in Fresno, and usually the open mics here, they'll give you 5, sometimes 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So you this is definitely a better place to be. If you're going to start with that, if you're going to be working toward that kind of stand up, you're going to get enough time to actually play with it on stage rather than just, you know, go up there. You got 3 minutes to make people laugh and then get off stage because there's 20 other people in line behind you and we've only got an hour and a half.
Yeah, that it absolutely makes sense. I mean, I can understand why it's probably a very difficult skill to acquire to be able to tell a comparable, understandable, and funny story in 3 minutes. But I feel like that's a little bit of a challenge because when you're working with existing scaffolding like a memory, because that's what a story is, it's just a memory, I don't feel like it's coming from some sort of half-assed creative place where I'm just trying to get a joke. It feels like a little bit more organic, and I like that. And I've always loved, even from years before having the notion to start doing stand-up comedy, was was watching stand-up performances where I knew the stories that they were telling on stage were true because they had said them in another interview, or I'd heard them say in another stand-up special or something like that, where I knew that this actually happened. For me, that always just seemed a whole lot more hilarious. You know, it's kind of like that thing that happens when you watch a movie and at the beginning of it says based on a true story. All of a sudden, the movie seems a whole lot more serious because it's based on a true story or something like that. Yeah, I don't know. It's just a weird observation of mine.
No, if if you think that this really happened, it makes it funnier.
Yeah.
For some reason, just it, you know, the leather jacket thing.
Yeah.
If she bought me that jacket for my birthday, and so you know that was real. If I had just made that up,
yeah.
You know, even if I told it in a manner where I'm not making it clear that you know this happened to me, it doesn't seem like it would be as accepted because people don't. It doesn't feel as real.
Yeah.
But Nick, we'll get. I didn't forget about you, man.
That's all right.
We're gonna take a break real quick. 15 minutes already.
God damn.
Yeah, this is JT Foreman. I'm here with Colton, the contrary Contreras, and Nick. Don't call him a spit Castillo. There's not that many things that rhyme with Nick. Sorry, could do Nick the Dick, but I used that before.
Yeah,
with somebody else. So. And I'm JT Foreman with Bitter Comics, and we'll be right back. This is JT Foreman. I am here with Colton Contreras.
What
and
up?
Nick Castillo. We are the Bitter Comics, and we're back. All right. So, Nick, you aren't a comedian or even really interested in doing comedy. In fact, I think it would be difficult to pry you off of the couch right now.
Yeah.
But so how do you guys know each other? It's from high school or something, or
oh shit, before high school, man.
It's long before high school. Me and him go back. Jesus, third, fourth grade, something like that.
Oh,
Jesus,
wow.
I think even before that,
it might have been third grade. I think.
Yeah. I've known him for the better part of like 15 years now, easily, probably closer to 16 or 17 years.
Oh, you know the friend of mine that I have known the longest would be Wade Linder. I've known him since we're freshmen or sophomores in high school, something like that. But you know, I moved around a lot when I was a kid, so I don't know anyone from before like sixth grade, and didn't you know it was we finally moved here when I was like 10 or 11 to Fresno, and then we moved out to Clovis a year later. So I don't have that grow up in one place my whole life thing that you guys seem to have.
Oh, it's terrible, actually. It's actually a horrible.
It really blows.
It's totally horrible. I can tell you, this is actually something I was speaking with my wife with not just literally 4 hours ago. The problem with living in the town that you went to high school in means that everybody's connected to everybody, and everybody knows everything about somebody. Like, you can, like, for instance, there's a woman that works with my wife, and she came to me today on her lunch break and said, oh, hey, so-and-so works at my work. And my first thought was, so-and-so used to do a bunch of coke and blew my friend behind a bar one time. That's the kind of things that happen in a small town, is that you get to know all the dirty secrets of all the people that you went to high school with. You know, everybody's networked and connected with each other, and you kind of always have the backstory of how everybody got to their places. You know, this person's mom was a fucking drug addict, or this person was a whore back in high school, or whatever. And I've got to say,
wait, who was the whore?
They're legal now.
They're legal now. Yeah, okay. We're older now.
All right.
Yeah, but it is absolutely completely annoying to still live in the town where people can remind you of the stupid shit that you used to do. Yeah. And also you're reminded of the other stupid shit that people used to do.
Well, you know, when I moved back here to Fresno, after I graduated from high school, I joined the Navy. I was gone for a decade almost.
Yeah.
And when I moved back here to Fresno, I was actually concerned that I would end up having that problem. I'd bump into people that I know who remembered me because I got picked on a lot.
Yeah.
Until my senior year, I hurt a couple of people.
Yeah.
And then everyone left me alone after that. It's amazing how that works.
Yeah.
But I really kind of dreaded bumping into people who knew me in high school and knew all the names I got called and all that other stuff. But actually, I have not run into hardly anyone from my high school.
Wow.
Since I've gotten back here. But, you know, of course, I moved back here when I was like 28 or 29.
Yeah.
Though, so, you know, it was you know, 10 years later before I came back. And I was in Clovis, not Fresno, so I don't know. Wade, my buddy Wade, is the only guy that I remember from high school that I have bumped into. Now, of course, I couldn't tell you the name of more than two or three people from high school. I can't even remember names. You know, there's Wade Linder, there's Jeremy Habiger, and I don't remember anyone else's names.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, it's not. Partially just because I didn't have a whole lot of friends, but also just because I haven't even given them a second thought since I left.
Yeah, yeah.
Because why, you know?
Yeah, I can say I wish I've done the same for some other people, but unfortunately, I don't mean to sound like I regret everything that I ever did in high school. I just really tired of seeing the same fucking people all the time.
Yeah.
And it's just, I just wish there was new people involved in my life every once in a while. And that's another one of those reasons. Yeah, that's another one of the reasons that I was interested in doing stand-up comedy was to get involved into something that I knew nobody else was involved into doing, and it was something that I can do.
Nobody else that you knew
was exactly. doing Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's only one person that I, of the 3,500 people that had graduated from the side of town that I lived on, there's only one other person that I know that does stand-up comedy in any type of way that anybody would know him. Yeah. And he's actually doing quite well from what I understand.
Who's that?
Daniel Eaches.
Oh yeah, Dan. He's hilarious.
Yeah, Daniel.
Yeah, he's I think he's moved down to Long Beach now. And
yeah.
He's a great comic.
We got out of high school. Daniel Eaches actually had the good sense to do what everybody else should have done and get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
And he was never one of the ones to, you know, there was a kind of a core group of party people in my high school. I don't remember my high school being very clique-like as far as popular or unpopular or these people get picked on. Uh-huh. I remember it as people that drank and people that didn't drink. People that fucked, people that didn't fuck, people that smoked pot, people that didn't smoke pot. And that's how I remember high school. And our high school, he was never a participant, as far as I knew, in kind of the heavier side of things, you know, getting involved in really heavy drinking, staying out late, partying all the time. I don't remember him doing that. I remember smoking pot with him, but I don't remember ever him being a complete savage or anything like that.
Well, you know, you look at him, he's short and he's skinny as a rail. I mean,
yeah, but he did hang out with us. He did hang out with those of us that did participate.
Well, yeah, Daniel is one of those people that can get along with anybody.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah, so
I haven't spoke to him in probably 7 years.
Yeah. But so Nick, so you guys knew each other in high school,
all through. Yeah.
What are you doing as far as a creative thing? I mean, I know. Colton, you're into music as mm-hmm. well as you want to start doing comedy. Yeah. Nick, what do you...
What do I do?
Yeah.
I kind of write parody music. I mean, I've written a couple of songs. I never recorded them. Okay. They all kind of blow, but because I wrote them when I was 14.
So you're more of one of those guys that's kind of laid back and enjoying life and not too...
I guess you could say that. Unemployed and all that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. No, actually, you know what? Honestly, a friend of mine, when I was living up in Seattle, said something to me. He said, "I can't imagine lying on my deathbed and wishing I had worked more."
True that.
And, yeah, very much so.
He had a really kind of a stressless life.
Yeah.
You know, he made good money, but not great.
Yeah.
But he didn't have extravagant tastes. So, you know, it's like, imagine if you made, I don't know exactly what his income was, but imagine if you were living your current lifestyle but made 50 grand a year.
That'd be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I probably wouldn't change much about my life if my income doubled.
Yeah.
Because I'm kind of happy where I'm at, really. Yeah. So all that would do is allow me to build up a bank account and retire early.
Yeah.
You know, and really that would be my goal if I suddenly, you know, somehow got into an occupation where my income went up a whole lot. So.
Yeah.
But you know, yeah, I can't imagine lying on my deathbed and wishing I'd worked more. You know, that's not what we don't live so we can work. We work so we can live, and that's that's something a lot of people seem to miss out on. But you know, my great joy is getting on stage and telling jokes. I love it, and it's if I could somehow be doing that for a living, I would love to. But as long as I can continue, you know, doing shows once in a while and going to open mics, I'm happy.
Yeah, I always thought that the old Ellen DeGeneres joke was probably the best summation of my attitude of life. Is you know, you wake up in the morning and you jump in the car to drive you to work to pay for the car. It's fucking ridiculous to work in that type of cycle. And I've always, for my idea, my perfect life has always been to do something creative and get to go on the road as much as possible. That's always been my ultimate existence, is to be a touring musician. That's the thing I've always wanted to do. I've never in my life had any ideas or inclinations of wanting to be signed or have any type of high levels of success, but it's always been, you know, wanting to get out there, hit the road, tour around with a bunch of friends and get into some trouble. And that's the kind of thing I've always wanted to do. And if I only made $20,000 a year, if I made $20,000 a year as a musician, you would be in front of the happiest fucking person you can possibly imagine. And that's the type of thing that I hopefully, you know, might come out of something creative that I do.
You know, 20 grand a year, you could almost afford to be homeless.
Yeah, you could almost. Yeah.
Well, you know, I've been discovering how expensive it is to be poor.
Yeah.
Because, like, I paid $35.79 for a taco the other day. Mm-hmm. Because that's what the overdraft charge
was. Yeah.
I have my debit card is set up so that it will simply reject the purchase.
Awesome.
But, you know, I'm not sure what's worse, getting that bank statement that says that the burrito cost you $35.79, or being told by the little girl behind the counter that the credit card was rejected for 79 cents. I'm really not sure what's more embarrassing.
I can tell you, I've actually made that decision to make that purchase 100% sober, but I just really wanted it. I was at a gas station, and I knew in my bank account there was $5.27. Yeah. And the pack of cigarettes was $5.41. I had scoured my car, could not find any change, was walking around trying to find somebody to ask for change. There was nobody there. It was like 4 o'clock in the morning at 7-Eleven. And I was on my way home from work, and I decided, fuck it, I'll eat the $27 overdraft fee if I can get my pack of cigarettes right the fuck now.
Well, you know, if I were in that position and I decided that I had to have that cigarette so much,
yeah,
that I was going to eat the overdraft fee,
yeah,
I would probably buy a carton.
Very much.
Yeah, get your money's worth out of it.
It's make it worth your while.
Yeah.
If you're gonna end up getting that extra fee anyways, you might as well do something with it. It's yeah. Like, it go big. Really.
Yeah, go big or go home. Yeah.
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 No, don't you. If there's someone so mad at you, you're going to kill everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Just shoot everybody.
Yeah, you shoot one person, you're a murderer.
Yeah.
You shoot everybody, you're crazy.
Jesus Christ.
There's actually a long trend in murderers using multiple murders to seem as if it's some sort of random event.
Yeah.
It's a trick that hitmen use, is that instead of, they'll go into a restaurant and kill the one person that they're supposed to, then they'll kill the other four people at the table, because then it just looks like a mass shooting.
Yeah.
You can't tell who was the real target.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, did you see Jack Reacher?
No, I haven't.
Oh, that's a spoiler alert for a not so great movie anyways. But, yeah, that was what the murderer in that movie did, was, you know, he was after this person, but he set up at as a sniper, and he killed like five people.
Nice.
So now everyone thinks, oh, it's just a mass shooting.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he set it up so that it looked like some other person was the actual shooter. So now it looks like this other person is a mass shooter, and but of course, Tom Cruise as Jack Reacher comes in and solves the case. Spoiler alert: Tom Cruise, the hero of a movie. Yeah, he finds out who the real murderer is.
Yeah.
I know what a shock it is for everyone out there.
I can't stand Tom Cruise in any type of role.
Really?
Except Tropic Thunder.
No, not... Tropic Thunder, because he was a parody of himself. But yeah. I can't... Him and Brendan Fraser.
Well, you know, I really liked Tom Cruise in... what was the name? Magnolia.
Ugh.
No. I thought when he was doing the infomercial, that was awesome.
Ugh. Sir.
Worship the cock and tame the tongue. I thought that was hilarious.
I've always said that Christian Bale is everything Tom Cruise wishes that he could be.
Yeah, probably. Well, you know, the thing I really liked in that movie is that I was working at a movie theater when it was in the theaters.
Oh, okay.
And at a show time, like the second showing, the 2 o'clock show, these two women who looked to be in their late 30s, early 40s, came in to see the movie, and then exactly when I expected to see them come out, which would be time it right when that scene is at, they come out and demand their money back. And so I give them their money back, and I said, it was at the Tom Cruise scene, wasn't it? And they're like, yeah, I can't believe he did something like that. I said, well, you know, if you want to go back in and watch the rest of the movie, I won't charge you. You can.
Yeah.
but I saw the film and I thought it set up his character's personality really well.
Yeah.
Because that scene's not a political statement. That's just, this is who this guy is, and you end up learning why later on.
Yeah.
You know, if people, they get reflexively irate, you know, sometimes. And that if you start talking about, you know, in your comedy, if you start talking about anything even remotely controversial, you're gonna discover that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but well, hey, we're gonna take a break again real quick. This is
holy shit. Was that really 15 minutes?
Yeah, it was another 15. This is JT Foreman. I'm here with Colton Contreras and Nick Castillo. We are the Bitter Comics, and we'll be right back.
Let's talk normally.
This is JT Foreman. I am here with Colton Castillo and Nick Castillo. We are the Bitter Comics, and we're back. And
no,
joining
no,
us.
No,
you fucked up.
Colton Castillo.
I thought you did.
Hey, hey, we're best friends.
You know what? When other people make mistakes, I edit that out. When it's me, I leave it in. Colton Contreras and yes. Nick Castillo. And this is JT Foreman with the Bitter Comics. And we're back. And joining us is Colton Castillo. Colton Contreras' the love of his life, his lady, his ball and chain. The bitch that makes him do shit all the time.
Yes, sir.
Whatever.
Yes, sir.
I want to call this. Yeah. What would you prefer to be referred to as?
The wife.
The wife. The wife of Colton Contreras. It's Adriana Contreras. Yay!
Hello!
Woo! Yay!
Thank you for agreeing to come and join us.
No problem.
There's a particular website that I found, an interesting product that I would like the vaginal perspective on.
Okay.
If that's all right. This... Okay. Now, sex toys are fun.
Yes.
Yeah. But you know, they're useful, but they can be kind of boring. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just kind of there, and there's nothing exciting. And so they've tried to make them more you know, artistic, right? You
yes,
got
sir.
The bunnies, and you got the fish, and you yeah. got all these other weird kind of shapes. Well, there's a website, Masterpieces, M-A-S-T-U-R, pieces,
okay.
.com.
Nice pun.
Yes, and they have come up with some interesting shaped dildos.
Okay.
Okay, we've got the Vagini.
The Vagini?
The Vagini.
The Vagini.
Vagini.
Yeah.
Yes, that's good.
It looks like a genie. Goes the Vag. There's the Rampant Rabbi.
Oh my
Rampant goodness. Rambi. I like
that's
it.
That's
Rabbi.
Fucking awesome.
That is a superhero.
Yes, that's right.
Just like the Hebrew hammer.
Yeah.
Cunt Dracula.
Yes. Yes.
That's a fucking porno.
Of course, this is the vampire one. And of course, my favorite. The Buckingham Phallus.
Oh, excellent, yeah. Excellent.
That's classy.
That's classy.
That's fine.
How would classy. You like to shove a dildo shaped like the Queen of England into your vag? How about that? So I did want to get the vaginal perspective on this. If you want to come over here
yeah,
and take a look.
Yeah, let me see what these look
you can see
like.
The pictures here on masterpieces.com. And I don't know if they have different sizes, but I can't imagine they would expect one size fits all. I mean,
yeah,
you know, they gotta have different sizes.
Let's be honest, they're sloppy cunts out there.
Hey, yeah.
Anyone who, I don't remember who did this joke, but anyone who said size doesn't matter has never had sex with a woman with a giant vagina.
Yes, that's very true.
A giant vagina.
That's right.
I keep telling you that every once in a while, vaginas get exposed to too much radiation, and they grow teeth, and they get bigger.
Yes, and that would be the cunt Dracula. but, I will put a link to this in the show notes. I just thought this was hilarious when I heard about it. But, yeah, we've got...
I love that Queen of England.
Yeah. Well, I mean, great. Look at the crown. That looks like it might...
Painful, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, that's like... Pointy. Ribbed for her pleasure up there. It's,
yeah.
It might be a little dangerous,
I
you know.
I think the cunt Dracula is the one shaped most like a regular penis. That would probably be the least.
Well, you know, I've spent some time examining mine. And I have to say that I don't think mine resembles any of these, really.
Probably not.
But,
I hope not.
But, but yeah, so... The Vagini, the Rampant Rabbi, Cunt Dracula, and the Buckingham Phallus are here. And like I said, the website is masterpieces.com, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But, any thoughts on this, guys?
I think it's an important service to the country and to the human race at large to make strangely shaped vaginal insertion objects.
I thought the word country had a O in it.
Good one. There you
do you want to see these?
No, I saw them.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, okay.
Yeah. So, I've seen worse.
Yeah, I've seen much worse. one of the best ones, actually, this guy showed me is the Avengers-themed vibrator series.
Avengers-themed vibrator series, as in like the comic book.
As in the movie. And okay. Each one of these marital aids is... shaped and functioned to fit a particular profile. For instance, the Thor is a double motored electric vibrator. The Hulk
is it the most attractive one too?
Yes, I think so. And the Hulk is a 12-inch oversized dildo.
Donkey dick
dildo. So each one of them seems like the Black Widow.
Don't make it angry.
Yeah, the Black Widow is like a little pocket pussy, and it's small, and yeah, every one of them is themed a little bit different.
Yeah.
It was actually awesome. Amazing. I loved that one. That was actually really good.
You know, I whenever I see this sort of thing, I wonder whether the idea was come up with by a man or a woman, because I don't see how these are gonna be more functional than a regular one. It's just, this seems like a novelty thing. It makes me think a guy came up with this, right?
Well, probably, because I mean, there's really no point in having all that unless you're gonna, you know, show it off or have it not sitting on your coffee table like as a centerpiece or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're gonna have bumps and stuff on your vibrator, you want them more strategically placed, not decorative, right?
Yeah. For sure.
So, yeah. Okay, well, yeah, thank you. I appreciate your input on that there. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. When I heard about this, I thought it was hilarious, so I had to look it up. One other news story I heard about recently. I'm going to pause the recording for just a second so I can pull this up on Internet Explorer. We'll be right back. All right, I found the news story I wanted to talk about. Apparently, Fox News has a bug up their butt about the new Lego movie. So I'm going to play a clip from Fox News right now where they were talking about the anti-business Hollywoodness. Yeah, Hollywood.
Yeah, very
is anti-business.
Yeah.
That's, you know, movies are the second largest export industry in the United States, right? Behind airplanes.
Really?
Yeah, Boeing and the aerospace industry is our largest, you know, our largest export industry. Second is movies, third is TV.
Really?
In dollar value, yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah. It was like Avatar made like $1.1 billion in the U.S. and then another $1.7 billion in the rest of the world. Wow. In ticket sales when it was out in the theaters. Yeah, Hollywood is not anti-business. It's big business.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely
our
big
business.
Yeah.
But, anyway, here we go.
Well, Hollywood pushing its anti-business message to our kids. First, it was the Muppets movie. Remember, they used an oil baron as the enemy. A year later, it was the Lorax, the casting environmentalist against anyone who dared to create a new business. And, well, now it's the Lego movie with the villain named President Business. Take a listen to him.
Would you cancel by 2 o'clock? This next meeting could run a little bit deadly.
Looks a little bit like Mitt Romney joining us.
You know, it's this classic, you know, anything that isn't produced to the kids to be pro-capitalism or pro-traditional values is automatically demonized and... It's an attack on traditional American values.
Well, you know, you that is a thing with the political right in this country.
Yeah.
If you're not pro them, you're automatically anti them.
Yeah, exactly.
It couldn't possibly occur to them that, hey, maybe... they're just making a movie.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
And you know, who else can afford to try to take over the world, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I don't know if you've looked lately at the criminal mastermind section of Amazon.com, but mind control devices are expensive.
Indeed, sir.
And you know, even if you're a do-it-yourselfer, the weather dominator kit is pricey.
It is. You
know, but
especially if you get the turbo package.
Yeah, especially if you get the turbo package.
But and shipping? You know, fuck that.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah.
You better go pick it up yourself. Yeah. You don't want to pay for shipping on that thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think Fox, what they need to do is just make their own pro-business movie and have, you know, they should just come up, okay, who's the real villain?
Yeah.
And then have that kind of person. You know, I figure it'll be like an illegal immigrant will have like hundreds of anchor babies. So they just have this gigantic welfare check coming in every month.
Oh, no, what's the...
So then they can afford to arm all of their anchor babies, and they're going to use this to take over the world.
Yeah, the famous conservative quote, the welfare queens.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be...
Octomom.
Yeah, there would be Octomom as the villain, and she would be urinating on a Bible. And,
yeah, exactly.
She'd be the perfect villain for their right-wing America. You know?
Well, yeah, you really. I mean, who else is going to be able to afford to take over the world?
Well, I mean, you know, yeah. We jest and all, but I mean, the truth of the matter is that Fox News is poison to Western society.
Yeah.
It's a poisonous cancer in Western society, this dogmatic, right-wing, Christian, business agenda, ultra-conservative propaganda machine that they're putting out there is so far out of reality. And at this point in Fox News' existence, it's not even a political point. It's just anti these things. It doesn't stand for anything in particular. It's just anti all these things that are up in our poll numbers, right? So they're like this. They're anti-Lego movie. And then for most of it, they're just anti-liberal in general. They're not really conservative as much as they're just fuck everybody that isn't a Bible-humping small business owner in the Midwest.
And by the way, Obama's a terrorist.
Yeah, and Obama's a terrorist. Yeah,
yeah. The Muslim with the crazy Baptist preacher.
Yeah, exactly.
I never understood that. And when I would talk to the conservatives about that, well, you know, he's Muslim. It's like, well, yeah, but didn't he have that crazy? Yeah, and he had that crazy preacher.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. But wait a second, hold on. He's Muslim, but he has the crazy Baptist preacher.
Yeah.
Do you not see the contradiction here?
Yeah.
And they're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't know how he's supposed to be a communist and a fascist at the same time. And, you know, I was talking to one of my brothers about this, and you know, I told him that I thought it just seems like a lot of the opposition to Obama is kind of racist.
Yeah.
And he would actually say, what are you talking? It's not racist. And you know, someone else who was there with us at the time said, what are you calling me a racist? You don't know me. I was like, I didn't call you anything. I don't know you well enough to make that kind of assessment.
Yeah.
I just said the opposition to him, because I know when I went to a teabag rally,
yeah,
and I saw the poster someone had up, or the sign someone had up, of Obama dressed like Hitler.
Yeah.
And then the other one of Obama and Michelle dressed as gorillas.
Yeah.
You're going to tell me that there's no racial component at all to this.
Yeah, yeah. I don't necessarily... My personal opinion has never been that anti-Obama theory isn't necessarily racist at heart, but it does have racist tendencies in it. And that... No president has ever has had the media come down on him as hard as this guy did from the jump.
Yeah.
You know, we're 6 years in now, and we have reasons for disliking him. You know, I have strong legitimate reasons for disliking.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the drone program.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not a big fan of the targeted assassination.
I'm not a big fan of unlawful detainment, that all these kind of things that he's doing, where, you know, being able to prosecute people without trials and no lawyers.
In his defense, a lot, if not all of that stuff, got started under Bush.
Bush, yeah, exactly.
But, you know,
Patriot Act.
The
reality of the situation is that the opposition that we see today, with all this legitimacy behind it, is as strong, if not less strong, than the opposition he got in January 2008.
Yeah.
This stuff started in January 2008 before he had signed his name to a damn thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the big problem is that the right can't complain about all the legitimate things that we're talking about because they agree.
Yes.
You know, it's like they were all for the you know, the the unlawful detention and let's not bother giving a trial to people that we've decided are terrorists and all that. They were all for that.
Yeah.
So, you know, the things that are legitimate complaints against Obama are, you know, the Obama talking about possibly cutting back on welfare and Social Security. You know, they want that, so they're not going to complain about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes I think that Obama is only saying those things to keep the left from pushing him too hard on other stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, it's keeping his base distracted from pushing him too hard on other things that we want also.
Yeah.
You know, but we're at 45 minutes again. We're going to take a break.
Jesus Christ.
We'll be right back. This is JT Foreman. I'm here with Colton Contreras and Nick Castillo. We're the Bitter Comics, and we'll be right back. This is JT Foreman here with Colton Contreras and Nick Castillo. We're the Bitter Comics, and we're back. And Adriana has abandoned us because she's playing with the dogs.
And her beans.
There's one of them. Hey, doggy. I like dogs. I have a mild allergy to them. I wish I didn't, because I really like dogs. But, you know, I might not be using the right word here, so forgive me. But from a evolutionary point of view, the human race owes a great debt to canines.
Indeed.
Because, you know, honestly, I do wonder if it were not for the symbiotic relationship that humans had made with certain animals, dogs and horses especially.
Domesticated animals, yeah.
If we'd have made it, you know?
Oh, absolutely not. There's a great, great, great book on that very same subject. It's called Guns, Germs, and Steel.
Absolutely great book.
It's absolutely one of the best reads you possibly can have. It's also extremely depressing, but it's amazing. Essentially, it's the... it answers kind of one of the very simple but age-old questions of why are there some civilizations on the planet, like you look at like Papua New Guinea, that have never reached a level of civilization, have never reached a level of society that you see in like European or Mediterranean countries or Eastern European or Eastern Asian countries. Why has South America never had a great technological empire? And why has Europe consistently had, or the Southern European, Northern Mediterranean territories consistently always had the jump on every other society besides the Eastern Asian societies? And the simple answer is what you're exactly talking about. It's not just domesticated animals, but it's domesticated crops as well. It's the prevalence of natural resources that are easily manipulated by the human race. That's why, you know, in tropical areas around the equator, you never saw great civilizations develop in human history simply because the environment is so harsh. But you have that nice, cozy Eastern Asian area, and there is a ton of native resources in that area, as well as the Northern Mediterranean area, that are readily manipulatable and readily available to the human race to domesticate.
Is it because the environment was harsh, or because the environment wasn't harsh? Now, here's what I mean. If you live on, let's say, an island in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Okay, food is readily available. You throw a line in the water, and you get fish.
Well, it's not the readily of availability. It's the difficulty, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but if you live in the middle of, say, Siberia...
Mm.
You're going to have to figure some shit out if you're going to survive.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I think it, of course, I haven't read that book, so I don't know your evidence for backing up that it was the resources, it being easily exploitable or readily usable. But it seems to me that you're not going to develop a technology that there isn't a need for.
Well, the
so, like, if population levels don't get to the point where you need to start cultivating crops, you're never going to move from hunter-gatherer to agrarian society.
The book talks about that a bit.
Oh, it okay. Does.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
It's a really interesting topic in general. You know, this is kind of a side note, but are you familiar at all with dog breeds?
Not a whole lot.
Well, the oldest dog breed in the world is called a band dog. B-A-N-D-O-G, Bandog, right?
Okay.
Ban is a very old term. I cannot remember what language it's from, but ban means tied dog. It was the first species of dog that we found that we could tie to a post. And originally, the way that the first man used dogs was at night, whatever dogs that they had attracted to the camp that day by leaving scraps of food out, and that's how they would attract dogs. You know, they would make whatever they made from their kill and then leave scraps around the camp. Dogs would come in, eat the scraps, and after a while, dogs would come further into the camp and then further to the center, and then you could pet them, talk to them, start working with them, training them. And the goal of this was at night, if you got dogs to be loyal to your tribe, to be, you know, in your area, you know, their den is not too far from your den, they will become protective of your den as well. So they would use dogs to ward off night predators at night. Tied dogs were the first dogs that we ever discovered that eventually we were able to take wolves and tie them to a post and leave them on the perimeter of our camp.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah, and that's the first usage of dogs in
guard dogs, and we're still doing that exact thing.
Yeah, it's exact same thing. Tying a dog to a post. That's pretty much what we've been doing our entire existence.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to check that book. I'll probably put a link to something, either maybe the Amazon page or if that particular book has a website, I'll put a link to that in the show notes.
It's got a TV show attached to it.
Yeah, it has a TV show. It's available on Netflix.
Okay. So before we go, one thing I did want to make sure I talked about. Last Saturday, I had my first ever headlining gig.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. So I'd gone to an open mic at the coffee lounge at First in Gettysburg, and I got there late, and the last person performing that night was on stage, and by stage, I mean the spot on the floor where they get to stand. And you know, I walk in and I was like, yeah, is it okay if I do some time? And they're like, well, yeah, we still got over an hour left of the scheduled time, and the last person's up now.
Yeah.
So they let me go up next, and they said, just keep going, do as much time as you want to. Mm-hmm. I ended up performing for like 30, 35 minutes, something like that.
Nice.
And, you know, I'd only performed for that amount of time once before, and that was when I was living up in Seattle. And due to a snowstorm, the headliner and the feature hadn't shown up yet. And it's an hour after the show was supposed to start. And the owner of the place is like, well, get up there and start. And so I ended up on stage for over an hour doing mostly just talking to the audience and trying to keep them interested.
Yeah.
So this was the first time I'd done that amount of time of actually my written material before. And after the show, the owner of the place asks me if I'd be interested in putting on a show of my own. So I said sure, and I started promoting a show. February 8th was when I held it, and got a couple of other local comics to open and feature and to host the show, and I headlined. And so this was my first ever headlining gig.
Awesome.
I did about 46 minutes, and it went really great. There's one thing I forgot to do. There was a chunk of my material where I talk about my relationship with my fiance.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one joke that I forgot to do in that I'm going to have to record later. Because I recorded the show because I'd like to try to put a CD together.
Awesome.
But I'm going to have to do this one other joke some other time and record it to...
Yeah.
To edit it in, it was the one about my the leather jacket my girlfriend gave me.
Yeah,
you know, she bought me this leather jacket which looks exactly like the one that she already has. So she bought me a matching leather jacket. You know, I felt like she was marking her territory.
Yeah,
you know, I'd rather she just pee on me, but she won't, no matter how many times I ask. But you know, that's the joke. I just forgot it.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
Went through all my other material, but. So sometime I'm going to have to go back, you know, record that one just so I can edit it in.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, the show went great. You know, the other comics were really good. The opening was Audrey Crescenti. And I don't mean this as a backhanded compliment. It will probably sound that way. But it's the funniest I've ever seen her.
Oh, awesome.
And, you know, the reason I say I don't mean it as a backhanded compliment, that doesn't mean she hasn't been funny before.
Yeah.
It just means this particular one is the best I've ever seen her do. Because I had someone say to another comic at a show I was at, you're a lot funnier than the other guy, and me being the other guy. And I'm like, gee, why don't you just look at me, tell me I suck? You know, I'd prefer that, really.
Yeah.
But hosting the show was Boney Beasley, you know, the guy in town. He He was in a band called the Argyle Pimps, which is I thought it was cool because you know they sample from other music, but they don't sample from stuff out of the 80s or 70s or 60s. They sample from music from like the 20s and 30s, which it's kind of neat. And you know it's all comedy music and parody stuff.
Yeah.
And then the feature act was Kevin Tinkin, another local comic. He's really funny and. Yeah. And I actually got three separate recordings of the show. I couldn't get my laptop to work to record it, but I used my digital recorder. Kevin has a digital recorder that he used. And there was another guy there who was one of the baristas at the coffee shop, had his laptop with him and his little mixer and plugged one of my microphones into that. And he recorded it. So I have three copies of the show. And I'm going to try to, you know, mix those together and see if I can make a CD. But, yeah, the show went great. I was really happy with it. You know,
what was the attendance like?
Well, the place is kind of small.
Yeah.
It had 40 seats only because I brought 10 chairs with me. but I sold all 40 tickets.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. But all of the 16 tickets that I sold, everyone showed up. Of the 24 tickets that my my fiance sold, 8 of those people showed up. So 16 people that she sold tickets to didn't show.
Yeah.
And she tells, well, you know, it's a Filipino thing. You know, you give them the ticket and they'll pay you later. But if they don't go to the show, they're not going to want to pay you.
Yeah.
And I could have sold those tickets to other people.
Yeah.
You know, I stopped marketing the show 3 weeks before it happened because, hey, all the tickets are sold.
Yeah.
And I even had people asking me, do you have any left? And I said, no. So I would have sold those tickets, at least some of them, to other people. But, you know, those 16 didn't show.
Yeah.
And in fact, one of the people, I can't remember her name, but she came there to the show, and she pays me for the 4 tickets of the 4 people, including her, that came, and then she hands me 3 tickets back. I says, well, I wasn't able to use these, so here you go, I'll give these back to you. I said, well, what good does it do me now? I mean, the show's over.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think I'm going to be able to sell tickets to the show that happened yesterday.
I guess you could if you could find one really dedicated fan that didn't get to go
yeah,
and it. Wants to say that they went.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah. It's like I bet I could sell tickets to Woodstock if I really tried right now. You know, so, you know, who knows? Maybe one day I'll be a big, big star and people will want to have that ticket from my first ever headlining gig. And I'll be able to say I was there. You know, you hear people talking about, oh, yeah, I saw Led Zeppelin or I was at Woodstock or I saw this or that or when it was around. I went and saw the Stones back when they were on this tour. And you know, I don't have any stories of musicians like that, but I have a couple of comedians like that I saw, you know, when they were still around. I saw Robert Schimmel at Giggles Comedy Club once. I saw Mitch Hedberg at the Laugh Stop in Houston.
Holy shit.
And, you know, so there have been a few of people that, you know, and I'm going to go see Bill Cosby when he's here in Fresno next month.
Really?
I'm really looking forward to that because, you know, seeing Bill Cosby himself is when I knew I wanted to be a comedian.
Yeah.
So, if I could somehow get him to let me just do 5 minutes beforehand before the show, and then I would be able to say I worked with Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
That would be the greatest thing in my life.
The only thing, unfortunately, I'm pretty sure if Bill Cosby is one of those old-timers that is famous for not having opening acts.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah. He really does seem like he probably just goes up there and does the whole thing himself.
Yeah, Bill Cosby doesn't need an opening act.
Yeah, but Stephen Wright, I saw him.
Wow.
At University of Connecticut. That was I saw Gallagher in 92.
Cool.
And, you know... People,
is this Gallagher or Gallagher's brother?
No, I saw Gallagher, actual Gallagher. Yeah, not Gallagher 2.
Yeah,
I saw Gallagher. But you know, he's in the 80s when comedy was big. He was the biggest selling comic of the decade.
Yeah.
So when comedy was big, he was the biggest. So that was for me. That was a real throw. He had like 9 or 10 Showtime specials during that decade. That was amazing. But, you know, that, and I feel, you know, when people talk about the music act that they saw, that's how I feel about, you know, these comedians that I got to see when they were still around. So,
yeah, Gallagher's one of those ones, I think we talked about this once before, was the, there's somehow in the world of comedy, it's the most successful comedians are marginalized and degraded by the rest of the comedy community. Like today, like I think I told you this once before, but the highest selling comedian of all time by a long shot is Jeff Foxworthy.
Oh, yeah, by far, yeah.
By a long, long standpoint. And
but no one respects him.
Nobody respects him at all.
No comic thinks he's any good.
No comic. You never see comedians talk about, you know, Jeff Foxworthy, what a great inspiration. Or,
yeah.
You know, the integrity of him. You know, it's all these other contemporaries that are out now. But by far, he's the most culturally accepted of them. And, you know, it kind of goes back, you know, something we were talking about.
Well, you know, the whole blue-collar comedy tour really gets crapped on by the comedy community.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are people that I could understand, you know, comedians aren't real, you know, fans of. Like, you know, with all of the joke-stealing stuff that around Carlos Mencia.
Yeah.
I can understand people not liking him because, you know, they've got a reason. But, you know, Jeff Foxworthy, okay, there's no strong social message in his material. He's not trying to have one. He's trying to make people laugh, and he's succeeding.
Yeah, I mean, by far, right now, the comedian's comic, the godfather of the modern comedy is by far Louis C.K.
He is
the god of modern. I mean,
of living comics, he's probably the most respected.
Yeah, definitely the most respected.
Chris Rock is real close.
Yeah, real up there. But I'd have to say, you know, with that legendary deal that he has with FX, where he basically gets to do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
And these, you know, really groundbreaking specials. But you forget, Louis C.K. has been around for 25 years.
Yeah.
And it's only really been in the last 5 years.
It took him 2 decades to become an overnight success.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And but I mean, even that guy, there's no real strong social message in Louis C.K.'s material. Louis C.K. talks about his kid for an hour and makes everybody laugh and laugh their asses off, and it's because of his style. It's the way that he approaches a mundane situation, like looking over a child. And but it took him 20 years to develop that style. And you know, I think it's kind of it's kind of ass backwards to disparage somebody like Louis C.K., Jeff Foxworthy, and look up to someone like Louis C.K. Because Jeff Foxworthy was Jeff Foxworthy in 1988. I mean, he was one of the people that was on Rodney Dangerfield's legendary special, you know, like Andrew Dice Clay.
Yeah,
all those guys that broke out. Jerry Springer. What the fuck? The guy that shouts all the time.
Sam Kinison.
Kinison, yeah. Oh my God, I can't believe I forgot Kinison's name. But yeah, you know, he was part of that crowd. You know, some of the greatest legends of all time, but he does not get the respect that those guys do. You know what I mean? And in any type of a way. But I mean, at least from a business perspective, you know, somebody that really understands the comedy business.
Well, I mean, he travels around in his own jet.
Yeah.
And has truckloads of his merch following him around on his tours.
Yeah.
Because he sells that many t-shirts and shit.
Yeah.
You know, so commercially... He is the success in comedy right now and has been for 10 years.
Yeah. Well, this whole thing that we're talking about, it goes to a very old argument of when it comes to creativity, does popularity generate legitimacy? If an artistic medium or an artistic project becomes, from any medium, you know, whether it be painting or music or whatever, once it becomes overwhelmingly popular, does it then receive a legitimacy because it's popular? And I say yes.
Well, I think in whose eyes is the question? A legitimate in the eyes of other comics? No. In fact, it seems to have the reverse effect.
Yeah.
In the eyes of the public? Well, certainly.
Yeah.
So, because, you know, it's the public that's buying your tickets and buying your album and wearing your t-shirt.
Yeah.
You know, so, but, you know, I try to think, who has been a hugely commercially successful comedian that also had a strong social message in his material? You know, Carlin?
Carlin. It's the only one I can think of.
And, you know, because, you know, everyone's got a joke here and there that is saying something. Like, there was one that Louis C.K., he talked about being on an airplane and he's in the first class.
Oh, giving section. Up a seat to the soldier.
And it's like, he sees the soldier, and I think I should give him my seat. I've never done it. And, you know, that is a real thing. And in fact, I saw a research study, a psychology research study, that
physiologically, there's very little difference between accomplishing something and thinking about accomplishing something.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people, that's why they always talk about, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, but they never go and do it because they already got the endorphin rush as if they had done it because they talked about doing it.
Yeah.
And so then now they don't have that hunger to go out and do it. Yeah. And, you know, I think that is because, you know, he even said he felt like such a good person because he thought about doing this thing that he wasn't going to do.
Yeah.
See the soldier. I should give him my first class seat and go back and sit in coach.
Nah.
Not fuck that.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved all of everything I've ever heard Louis C.K. done, even his early 90s. Stuff that he did when he was very young. Yeah. It still got that Louis C.K. type of fuck it all approach. You know, Louis C.K. is one of my favorite comedians because he's one of the few comedians that'll go to a new town and not do any crowd work whatsoever. None of this fucking, you know, butt fuck Alabama, you know, this is a great place or any of that stuff. You know, when he talks about the places he goes, like, yeah, it's a shithole. I'd never go back there on my own. I only go there for work. You know, fuck this place, all this stuff. And I love that non-pandering. And I think that's another big reason why he's so respected, because he's kind of got this my way or the highway kind of an attitude. But
Well, you know, that's something that is allowed now
in
the internet age that you couldn't do even 15 years ago.
No.
Because, you know, it's back once upon a time, you've got to make your thing so that it appeals to the mass.
Yeah.
Because there's only a couple of vehicles, I guess, through which to deliver your material. You know, you can go on TV or you can go into the comedy clubs. But now, because of the internet, you can find the people who do like you. I mean, that's a thing with the explosion of cable channels.
Yeah.
You know, once upon a time, you get a sitcom on ABC or NBC or CBS, and then Fox comes along, and then all of a sudden HBO decides to start doing a couple of original shows, and now FX and TBS and et cetera. You know, and now there's 100 different channels out there that are doing original programming, and they're not going for the 20 million viewers on each episode that NBC needs.
Yeah.
They're just like, you know what? If we got 1 million viewers to this show, and now we're getting a 1.5 share on that time slot, that's gigantic for TBS or the FX channel or whatever.
The difference between broadcast television and cable television as far as expenses are concerned is monumental.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the reason why that classic sitcom formula that's been on broadcast television has been around since the 1950s and is not going anywhere. 2.5 Men is one of the most retarded, brain-numbing, worst shows that's ever been on television whatsoever. But it's funny.
Yeah.
And it's going to make $20 million an episode.
Yeah. And now Big Bang Theory is taking over.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That spot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I haven't seen... I've seen an episode or two of each.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to sound like I'm some great sitting on high and, oh, you little... That's beneath me. It's not it's not that it's beneath me. It's I'm just not interested in that.
Yeah.
It's like my dad doesn't want to watch cop shows anymore.
Yeah.
And it's because he's tired of them.
Yeah.
You know, because is there really that much difference between Hill Street Blues and NYPD Blue and CSI New York? Not really.
Yeah.
Not that much. You know, it's still the same kind of thing, you know, and some cop shows are trying to do it a little different. Thing shows like Lie to Me and Bones are trying to figure out a different way to do the cop show. But, you know, when he watches it, he still says, you know, it's the same.
Yeah.
And to him, you know, it is. And I, you know, honestly, I see his point. I don't watch TV all that much, but it's not because of I don't like the shows. It's because I can't keep a schedule. You know, I won't remember to be at the TV at 9 o'clock every day, or, you know, every Tuesday to see the show anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I've watched Breaking Bad. When a new season comes out on Netflix, I watch the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only way I can catch it.
Yeah. I have a. I'm notorious for I won't watch any type of scripted television or commercial television for maybe a month, and then I'll sit down and binge for 6 hours on something like Breaking Bad or The Wire or you know The League or something like that, and just go on for you know 10-12 hours of brain-numbing Netflix experience.
Yeah, you know, and I enjoy the show more that way.
I do too.
I don't like waiting. Yeah. You know, it's I don't like waiting a week to find out what's going to happen next. The greatest... They want to do a cliffhanger at the end of every single episode.
Yeah, that's one of the greatest experiences that you can have as a human being is watching a Netflix episode, and at the end, it shows you the thing for next week, and it says, be back in 2 months, you know, with next season, and you say, fuck you, and you click the next episode. Yeah, that's the greatest the greatest shit in the world.
Oh, yeah, it really is. And, you know, I'm really glad that when Netflix decided to start doing TV shows of its own, they just put the whole season out.
Yeah.
It was what was the political one that they just
did? The House of Cards.
House of Cards. I watched the first season. I don't know if the second season has come out or not yet.
February 17th, I think.
Okay, cool. I'm looking forward to it because I watched the first season. I watched it all in a row in the space of a couple days, and I really enjoyed it. And I would not have come back every week to watch the next one.
Yeah.
Because I can't keep that schedule. I don't remember to go back to the stuff. You know, because it's probably just, you know, my own psychological disorder with my lack of an attention span.
Yeah.
You know, that I can't get back to see the next one. But
yeah.
I would end up missing it. It's like, you know what really did it? Why I don't want to wait for the next episode like that was season 4 of Babylon 5.
Some more deep nerd shit right there.
Yeah, yeah it going is, deep but, now.
So, okay, so here's what happened. I was living in Connecticut at the time. I was in the Navy, and I'm watching Babylon 5. And season 4 is the season that's on. And there's, I think it's 24 episodes in each season. So episode 16 is on. Then episode 17, 18, 19, 20. And then the next week, it went back to 16. Then 17, then 18, then 19, then 20, then 21, then 22. Then it went back to 20, then 21, and then 22, and then 23, and then it went back to 20, and then 21, and then 22, and then 23. And then the next week, 24, the final episode of the fourth season was finally on.
Yeah.
I was in the Navy. I had duty that weekend.
Oh, my God.
And I didn't get to see it. And it was like 8 years later. Because I didn't have cable.
Yeah.
And season 5 was on, what, TBS or something?
Something
or
like TNT? That, yeah. Yeah.
So it was on cable, and I didn't have cable. So I didn't get to see season 5. And it was like 5 years later that I finally got to see the final episode of season 4 of Babylon 5. And I thought it sucked.
Total letdown.
Yeah.
That episode, I don't know if you watched Babylon 5, but the final episode of that season, it wasn't a continuation of the story. It was like, okay, well, let's see what happens 100 years from now. Okay, well, what happens 1,000 years from now? Okay, what happens a million years from now?
Yeah.
And it did that. It didn't continue with that story with those same characters. It just said, hey, what if in the future, way in the future of what's happening in the universe? And so I thought the episode, so I waited 8 years to finally see it, and it was lame. And this has not just happened to me with TV. It happened to me with a three-part series of novels I was reading.
Really?
Yeah, it was. I used to read a lot of the novels that TSR put out.
Oh, okay.
Based on the different Dungeons and Dragons worlds.
Yeah.
And the Planescape world, which is sort of like a you know, heaven and hell and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It was a three-part series. I read the first one. A couple months later, the second book came out, and then the company TSR had some financial problems. And then got bought out by Wizards of the Coast, which, you know, made Magic the Gathering.
Yeah.
And then that got bought out by Hasbro a couple years later. And it was like 3.5 years before the third book finally was released.
Mm-hmm.
So I waited 3.5 years for that to come out. And, you know, the book was good. I enjoyed it as much as the others. But I waited 3.5 years for it.
And then it raped your mother.
Yeah, and then I raped my mom. And so, yeah, I don't want to wait.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And you know what? If I have to wait, I'll just wait for the whole thing.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
I saw the Hobbit movies. I saw the Lord of the Ring movies when they came out. I don't mind that so much because I know that's going to come.
Yeah.
At the time they made the movies already. Yeah, I'm not that worried about it. Plus, I do want to see it in the theater.
Yeah.
You know, I could wait for it to be on TV, but it's not as enjoyable as an experience watching it on TV as it is watching it in the dark theater on the huge screen.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get caught in that situation again where, okay, just one more and then miss it and then wait 8 years to where I was finally, I end up buying the DVD set. For like $60 or something.
Yeah.
Oh my God,
of season 4 of Babylon 5.
My God.
And it was, I put that disc in first and watched that one because I'd seen all of the rest of them already. And I was a little disappointed.
I would be too.
Fuck.
Yeah, that kind of sucked. But anyway, guys, thanks a lot for doing the podcast with me.
Oh, no problem, man. That was an hour already?
Yeah. Oh, actually, it's been an hour and 15.
Oh, wow.
But
time does fly.
Oh, yeah. Once I get my, I recorded the show that I did, and once I get it edited together, I'm going to try to put an album out. I'm not sure how I'm going to. I might just put a link somewhere to where people could buy it or download it for free.
Right on.
And Matt Amos, another comic in town, suggested that I put it on bandcamp.com, mm-hmm. which it's like a pay what you think it's worth kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I may end up doing that. And also, I'm probably going to see if I can get it on Pandora.
Right on.
Just because, I mean, because, you know, who knows? Maybe, someone wants to listen to comedians, and hey, maybe mine will come up randomly once in a while,
yeah.
and I'll get a 50-cent check every couple of weeks.
Right on. Or
every couple months, who knows? But, I recorded my first album. I'm happy. I just got to get it edited and published now. But, hey, guys, Willie, thanks a lot for doing
the podcast. No problem, man.
I really appreciate it.
This is awesome.
Absolutely. But do you guys have anything coming up you want to plug? Anything you're going
to
be doing? Or?
In about an hour, I'm going to take a large shit. So if everybody wants to come out to that,
okay. I'm looking forward to that.
Maybe some masturbation later.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
What do you mean maybe?
Well. Okay. Yes.
Definitely some masturbation later.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, I'm going to be putting on another comedy show on March 8th at the Coffee Lounge. It's at the northeast corner of First and Gettysburg here in Fresno. The headliner is going to be a guy named Tom Clark. I will be hosting the show. Tom Clark he played a bad guy on a CSI or something once.
Really?
And so I thought that was kind of cool.
That is pretty cool.
I'd love to play the villain on one of those cop shows.
No, I'm a natural villain.
Yeah. Well, then you're black.
Yeah, I'm a natural villain. Yeah, I'm a black guy, yeah. Yeah, that's what
I am. No, I wasn't going to go there.
He's black and Irish.
Yeah. Black and Irish?
Black and Irish.
It's just like Obama.
Yes. Yeah, because
I always thought that that's how he should have marketed himself, is put an apostrophe between the O and the B, and just go with Barry. It's Barry Obama, and he's Black Irish.
Yeah.
And,
so
I think that's what he should have done. But
yeah.
In fact, someone did a song, No One's as Irish as Barack Obama. I'll see if I can find that on YouTube. I'll put a link to that in the show notes, too. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But March 8th, Tom Clark is headlining the show. It's going to be a great show. It's only $10. You can buy tickets for that on livemusiccity.com. Or if you see me out there somewhere, just ask me if I got any tickets for sale. I'll probably have some. But I'm JT Foreman. I'm here with Colton Contreras and Nick Castillo. We are the Bitter Comics, and I will talk to you next week. Peace.
Bye.